Srila Prabhupada explained that the words of acharyas like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur are as good as Shastra, he is saying. And all of their actions are completely of the spiritual world. So in this way, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is in all respect a sparsamani, a transcendental touchstone, because in whatever way you get in touch with him, you'll be transformed into and come to the spiritual platform. In speaking about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we can cover many things. We can look at him like from a biographical aspect. We can look at how he grew up. We can look at how influential he became and how he acted as a government officer and used his service in the government to establish Krishna consciousness. Like, for example, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in charge of the Jagannath temple in Jagannath Puri, since he was the magistrate for that area. And he took advantage of that position to drive out corruption from the temple, because the temple is somehow or another under the government. So in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur took charge. He took advantage of that position. Also, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur at one point used his position to deal with Vrindavan, and he went on a mission to get rid of gundas, because there was at the time quite some gundas, and whoever would go to Vrindavan would be, there would be highway robberies and all these things. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur cleaned the place up, so to speak. So in that way, he used his government position also in the service of Krishna. At the same time, he had his personal project in Srinamayapur to discover the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which systematically studying old maps. Since, again, he was the district magistrate and therefore had access to government archives, he had access to old maps and all these kind of things. So he was able to get a whole collection going and to, in this way, ascertain where the Ganges had flowed at different points in time, because the river Ganges has moved tremendously in the Mayapur area. It is nowadays we go to Suvarna Bihar, which is on the other side of the Jalangi from our temple, and then when we are there, then we hear that at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Navadvip would reach all the way to there, so to the middle of like Sri Ganj, practically speaking, or opposite of the even Mahesh Ganj actually is there, and that means totally into the island of Godrum. Nowadays, that's the island of Godrum. But Navadvip was extending all the way there. That's like kilometers. That's many kilometers. So the Ganga would have moved many kilometers. And it said there was a crossing. There was a crossing from Navadvip just near Suvarna Bihar at the time of Sri Chaitanya. So just to get an idea how much the Ganga has moved. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very carefully researching, and finally, was dealing with different opinions about the birth site of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some claimed that it was in Navadvipa, And that was a good source of income also, because many pilgrims would come and give donations and so on for that holy place. Others were saying, no, this is not the real place. The real place is under the Ganga. But finally, it is Bhaktivinoda Thakur who discovered the birth site in Sridharmayapur, and then he arranged for the foremost of all the Vaishnavas at that time, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, to confirm that birth site, and therefore we're chanting Gauravir Bhavan Yadista Sanchana Priya Vaishnava Sarabhum Sri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Gauravir Bhavan Bhumnistram Yadista Sanchana. That means that he is the one, Jagannath Das Babaji, who discovered the birth site. And that Bhaktivinoda did, because Jagannath Das Babaji was greatly respected by all, and therefore it was difficult to argue. Whereas, you know, they were looking at Bhaktivinoda, first of all, Sangrihasta, you know, so not a real Vaishnava, let's be frank. You know, I mean, not the same as some Babaji, you know, the same, it's very serious. So therefore he needed that certification of the birthplace. So we can look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur like that. And when we look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we're looking at like a very multifaceted personality. It is just amazing, like how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was active practically in all kinds of fields. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur as an author, and an author wrote 100 books, right? And many of the books were actually written books, not translations, but written books, and he didn't have a dictaphone, right, at the time. He was like actually writing. And then we see that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote all these songs, right? And again, we're looking at like, yeah, a whole world in itself. So whatever it is, the appearance day of, or disappearance day, or any festival related to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you wonder where to begin. Then we have different biographies. We have the Svalikita Jivana, which is the an autobiography, which is interesting. After all, you know, everybody knows more about his own life than others do, you know. There's always some things that only you know, right? So, okay, he tells his own story, so that is interesting. And then there we have several biographies in ISKCON. We have Rupa Vilas, who did a biography called The Seventh Goswami. And that was a title that was given to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, The Seventh Goswami, because he picked up the thread of the teachings that had been enunciated by the six Goswamis. And there was a huge gap, because after the six Goswamis there was a period when Apa Sampradayas came up, and practically speaking, so much corruption amongst Vaishnavas and so on, and no regulative principles at all. Every principle thoroughly broken, and therefore the reputation of the Vaishnavas thoroughly broken. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was restoring that reputation. Then we see several magazines also. There's Sajjana Toshini, which is like very active in communication. Then the father of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the father of many children, but especially Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who virtually speaking became like an extension of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That relationship between the two is so deep, so strong in so many ways. I mean, actually, it is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur who gave him Harinam at a young age. So in a way, you know, the most essential initiation we understand to be Harinam. Previously, in the traditional Vedic culture, initiation, diksha, actually means the Gayatri Mantra. So it means what we now consider second initiation. And therefore, in the Gaudiya Math, it has been emphasized that diksha means the second initiation and is essential. And is therefore the real thing, so to speak. That's the real thing. But Srila Prabhupada had a more transcendental vision. And that vision was the real connection, the real sambandha takes place with Harinam. Because Harinam is the essence, it is the process. Golokira Premadana Harinam Sankirtana. It is the process that comes down directly with the full wealth of the spiritual worlds. And a connection with Harinam is sufficient to, in itself, to bring one to the spiritual world. Whereas the additional Gayatri mantra certainly deepens one's focus, one's commitment, and the quality of one's commitment. But even without, one can still go back to God. Therefore, the focus is on Harinam. But considering that actually he gave Harinam to his son Bhaktisiddhanta, I just can't remember right now exactly how old he was. Was it 10, I think, or was it 11? 11 is the formal age, that one, but something like that. I'm confused, because traditionally in Vedic culture, in the Upanayam ceremony or the sacred thread ceremony would be done at 11, but I think he gave it at 10, if I'm not wrong, but memory is failing. What to do? So then we're seeing Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Puri, and we're seeing that there is a whole biography provided by Fakir Mohan, right? Fakir Mohan being an initiated disciple in the Gaudiya Math and a close associate of Guru Govinda Maharaj, and a PhD scholar in Vaishnava philosophy. And he particularly is from Orissa and focused on Orissa, and he historically unveiled a whole connection of the family in Orissa. And Fakir Mohan also has the original Radha-Madhav deities from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that's something. And even that song, Jaya Radha-Madhava, is coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Mm. So in this way, we are very intimately connected with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's another important point to make. Very intimately connected in the sense that we see that Srila Prabhupada gave us a morning program and an evening program. But the substance of these, the songs that are being sung, is provided by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And also other chants like Narada and stuff, and Vishnu chant. Please. Ananda Bolohari. So in this way, we can appreciate Bhaktivinoda Thakur in many ways. In Jagannath Puri, we see he was there, of course, as a governor. His house was there. His Rath cart would stop in front of his house. The family took the small son there. The garland fell upon Bimal Prasad, later to become Bhaktisiddhanta. So we can look at many things. We also look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur being instrumental in developing the area around the samadhi of Haridas Thakur. There's also a poem that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about Haridas Thakur, Saragrahi Vaishnav. And we'll see if we can read some of these things. So what to do now with this lecture? That is the question. After all that. Well, let's dip a little bit into the Svalikita Jivan to begin with. That I'll do from memory. I always like to think that his family was not really a Vaishnav family. They were, like most Bengali families, Shaktas, worshipping Durga Devi. At least, that's what he's sort of writing. And we see then that he describes how in the garden there was a tree with very sweet reddish fruits on it. And as a boy, he naturally was attracted to that tree, but there was one problem with the tree. Everyone said there was a ghost in that tree, and that if you would go near that tree, that you would get big trouble, that ghost would attack you. So sort of the battle between fear and the senses. And but then there was a maid, and this maid, she seemed to know everything about ghosts. She was saying that fiery eyes and things like this, yeah, she would know. But she also said that if you chanted the name of Ram, no ghost would touch you. So he chanted the name Ram, 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 and went to the tree, and no ghost could come near. Ram, 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 and he took all those fruits, and by the mercy of Ram, he was protected. So he developed faith in the holy name of Lord Ramachandra. We see that later on, there's also this famous story that once Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was traveling with his son, and they came to a village in the late evening. And on the edge of the village, actually before entering the village, there was an old abandoned temple, and it was getting dark. So they decided, okay, we'll just stay here at this temple for the night, and then we'll see tomorrow, how we'll continue. So they stayed there the night, and then early morning they walked into the village. So the people said, where are you coming from so early in the morning? And where did you spend the night? No torch lights, no that, traveling in the night. No one was traveling at night. So, how did you come here so early in the morning? He said, oh, we stayed at that temple last night, at that abandoned temple. No. That temple, no, nobody can stay there. There is a terrible ghost in that temple. Oh, yes, yes, we noticed something, but we chanted the holy name. The holy name, and then that ghost disappeared. No, but how is that possible? We are quite sure that ghost is a Brahma Rakshasa. The ghost of the pujari who used to look after this temple. This man was very sinful, but he was always chanting Hare Krishna. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that, no, he was not chanting Hare Krishna. he was chanting the external shell of the Maha Mantra, where Krishna had withdrawn himself from that name, and therefore whatever he was showing was chanting, it was just a hollow shell, that was all that was left. So in this way, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave us insights in the holy name. Insights in the holy name he also gave in the book Harinam Chintamani, which is like one of his major books. There are amongst the 100 different books, three especially are considered very important. And one is Harinam Chintamani. And Harinam Chintamani is basically, he's expanding on the discussion that takes place in Chaitanya Charitamrita between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur. And he makes, in Harinam Chintamani, it is Haridas who is the speaker. And Haridas is explaining the glories of the holy name. And Haridas is explaining the 10 offenses and how they are meant to be avoided. And ultimately, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes one statement there in Harinam Chintamani. He says, in this world, nothing is real. In this world, the only thing that is real is the jiva, the living being, and the holy name, and nothing else. I mean, those are kind of like, boom. That's a very powerful statement. And one may think, yes, but what about the deities? What about this? What about that? Even worship of the deities is not sufficient without the holy name. Therefore, only the holy name, ultimately, that to boil it down to its roots. So that's it. At the end, it's nothing but us and the holy name. If you think about it like that, just everything else is gone. Just take it out. Photoshop, and just like so, erase it all. Like, the building's gone. The tree's gone. Everything gone. Only the holy name. Only the holy name. History gone. Future gone. Nothing is there, only the holy name. Think about it like that. So that is very interesting. There, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani also quotes the so-called 11th offense of inattentive chanting and says that inattentive chanting is the root cause of all the 10 offenses, of all the other 10 offenses. But that is a particular statement found there in Harinam Chintamani, which is not found in the Padma Purana. The Padma Purana, by the way, is another interesting thing. That the Padma Purana is, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out to us that at his time only 6% of Vedic literature was still available. And one particular Purana, which was it was difficult to ascertain what the bona fide form was the Padma Purana. The Padma Purana was sort of had been abused by many, and they had twisted it and added some verses and taken out some verses. Because one thing the Padma Purana does, it is describing that in Kali Yuga there are only four bona fide sampradayas. So not every sampradaya likes that particular verse. And some just, took it out and threw away the scroll and fixed the manuscript. So such kind of fixing was not uncommon. So the Padma Purana had become very obscured. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also published a version of the Padma Purana. So it's like that. When you speak about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's like he touched so many things. Let's read a little bit from some of his works. But before I do that, I was giving a little biography. And when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his maternal grandfather was hailing from a village in West Bengal near Ranaghat. And it's a very nice village there, and there is also a house dedicated to the family and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There are all kinds of deities in the house and many pictures, old images of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But in that village, a great disaster happened. Because in that village there was a cholera epidemic, and it wiped out his whole family. I mean, basically, it was such a disaster. When he heard the news that so many had died in the village, he decided to go there. And his whole family also was wiped out, except for his mother. His mother was there. So he had just gotten married, and now his mother was all alone. So then he was still studying, and studying law. And at that time, he also went there, picked up his mother, and brought her to Calcutta, where he was studying law. So looking after wife and mother while studying, not so easy. But you know, just a story like that. Right? If some drama like that happens in someone's life, that would be like a big, big story. You know, so that would be like a big story. The whole family wiped out by cholera. Oh my gosh! Then that's like a big story. But in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, it's just the detail. You know, it's sort of like, okay, it's a quick detail. It's not like it's such a big thing. First of all, he was transcendental to it. Second of all, it didn't like have such a deep impact on that this thing completely changed his life. I mean, you could imagine that it could be one of those chapters in the book, you know, and then this life-changing experience happened and the whole family dies. Yeah, that's life-changing, indeed. Yeah, after that you're not the same. But we don't see that so much. So I'm reading just some samples from the Chaitanya Sikhsamrita. I have not tried to collect a specific passage. You just open the book and start reading. Mahaprabhu said that the only Mahavakya is pranav. Its meaning is evident in the Upanishads. What the Upanishads teach is perfectly sanctioned by Vyasa in the Vedanta Sutras. The commentary of the Vedanta Sutras is the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first sutra teaches that the principle of transformation is the truth. Yato vaimam bhutani jayante. Taittiriya Upanishad also supports this. The Bhagavatam also established this truth, fearing that with the principle of transformation, the Brahman becomes changeable. Sankara establishes Vivartavad, the theory of illusion. This Vivartavad is the root of all faults. Parinamavad, transformation through the Lord's energies, is approved by all scriptures and is the principle of pure existence. If the eternal existence of the Lord's energy is not accepted in Parinamavad, then the defects of the Lord falling under illusion and deterioration of the Lord appear. But if the eternal, natural, superior energy of the Lord is accepted, then there's no fault in Parinamavad. So, what is going on here is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a book, the Chaitanya Sikh Samrita, based on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And in that book, he is now addressing the topic of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy in relation to the way that all material elements come into being from the Supreme Lord. Sankaracharya says this cannot be. Because the Lord is. He is. The Lord is not changeable. It's not possible that the Lord ever changes, says Sankaracharya. How can the Lord change? He's eternal. And his existence is basically is fixed. He doesn't change. Therefore, when it seems that the Lord is changing, then it must be illusion. And we are seeing, we're mistaking the rope for a snake. That's all. It's dark and we're seeing this rope and it looks like a snake. That's all. But it cannot be a snake. Brahman, says Sankaracharya, if Brahman is the Supreme, if the Brahman is the Supreme Lord, how can Brahman change? So, it sounds like solid logic, if you think about it. I mean, it makes sense. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out, he says, Brahman is not the Supreme Lord. Brahman is the Shakti. Brahman is the energy of the Supreme Lord. Is the effulgence of the Supreme Lord. And of course, because the Lord is always transcendental, his energy is also transcendental, but it is his energy, and his energy can change. The Lord doesn't change, but his energies change. And therefore his energies produce all kinds of byproducts, parinamavat. And Bhagavatam confirms this, says Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it does in the first verse. Janmadiyas yatunuyat itaratas chatesu bikyasura tene brahmari darya adhikavya muyanti yat surya. Says that Krishna is the origin of everything in this world. It's all emanating from him. So, in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining this. Parinamavad. Parinam means result or byproduct. So, that there are from Krishna many other byproducts coming. And that's very important. So that it's not all one, but actually is separated. Yes, it all has roots in Krishna. It is all Krishna's energy. In that sense, it's all one. But each form exists also separate from Krishna. So we are not Krishna. We are separate from Krishna. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tvevaham Jatunasam Tam Namej. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor all these kingdoms, nor in the future shall any of cease to be. So, individual existence. So, Mahayavata is being defeated here by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Another interesting topic in this Sikshamrita, Chaitanya Sikshamrita, is that is the description of all the demons in Krishna Lila and the various anartas they represent. And our Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj has spent quite some time with that. And so it is also mentioned there that some demons are killed not by Krishna, but some demons are killed by Balaram. Dainakasura, Divida Gorilla, and of course Pralambasura. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that all these anaitas that are represented here by various demons, He said, all the demons that are killed by Krishna, we should endeavor to overcome such anarthas and depend on the mercy of Krishna to become purified from them. But the anarthas that are relating to demons killed by Balaram, we actually have to overcome these anarthas ourselves. And we have to make that adjustment. Like Pralamba Sura is the example of gross materialism. Pralamba Sura is the embodiment of lust. He is the embodiment of greed. And he's hankering for power. So he's a gross materialist in all respects. And it said that, so that we have to change. We have to ourselves make an adjustment there. We have to make an adjustment in our behavior and in our mentality. And then, so that's like preliminary. It is also said that Balaram is plowing the field. He's carrying a plow. In Krishna, he sows the seeds in the sense Krishna gives the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. So there's the preliminary adjustment that we must make from serving ourselves and serving our senses to serving Krishna. And that's the change that is made. So in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives us more insight in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Another book, an interesting book, is Jiva Dharma. Jiva Dharma is interesting because it is a very elaborate description of the philosophy, but in the form of a novel. And that novel, so there is an intriguing story. And then beyond that intriguing story, the setting of the novel is West Bengal, shortly after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya. There are still people living who have seen Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda personally. That's the setting of the book. So it is very interesting. It begins right there in the very first chapter with a Siddha Pranali initiation. What is that? Okay. It starts right there with a description of a great Vaishnava. And then there is this very learned sannyasi. He is a sannyasi in the Shankara Sampradaya. And this sannyasi, he has wandered around India on various pilgrimages. He has studied all the scriptures, but he has come to the conclusion that it's all dry. And something is just lacking. And he has developed attraction towards Krishna. And therefore, in his travels, somehow or other, he has heard that there is a group of renunciants who live in somewhere in Navadvip, on one of the nine islands. And actually, Bhaktivinoda says in Godrumadvip. And they are residing there, and they are worshipping Krishna. So the sannyasi decides to go there. And as he meets them, there are really deep, enlivening discussions on Krishna. And it gets really to a very, very deep level, to the point where the sannyasi is just, his attraction to Krishna is increasing and increasing, and then at one point, the Baba, it's like the Vaishnava, begins to describe how it is the Nishanta Lila, and Radha and Krishna are still, they are meant to awaken, and then somehow at that point Jyotila is coming. So there is a need for Radha and Krishna to get a message about this. And then he reveals to this sannyasi who he actually is in the spiritual identity, and a gopi who actually as an eternal servant has the position as messenger. So you have to immediately pass on this message now. And makes that personality act in Krishna's eternal pastimes. So, and he receives that grace of a superior Vaishnava who sort of opens his eyes to that identity. So it begins with that, so that there we sort of, well, we start on a high level and on a high note, so to speak. But don't worry, we don't stay on a high note at all. It goes down into all the nitty gritty of like low life in the material world. Oh yeah, that's good. Yeah. No, that's much better. It's more easy to deal with. Yes, then it carries on and it describes how Vrajanath was born in a Brahmin family. And Vrajanath was very expert in the philosophy of Naya, logic, which had been brought to Navadvip by Vasudev Sarvabhauma from Ayodhya, and then improved upon by the Red. And ultimately Navadvip became very famous for its logic, its science of logic. Right? And so Vrajanath was expert in this logic. Mm. And yes, in fact, he was the undisputed leading scholar in his time, in his days, which was very difficult to accept for number two, because it's painful to be number two, if you know what I mean. If you're number 10, it's sort of acceptable. But number two is just a very annoying number, if you know what I mean. It's just too close to number one, you know. And there's only, if you are number two, there is really only one obstacle, if you know what I mean. Only one. And Raghunath's Chudamani is a title for a brahmana who has a jewel in his top knot on the hair. Raghunath Chudamani. It was just getting too much. It was getting to him that this Vrajanath was just like, you know, the one obstacle in his life. And therefore, on the night of the dark moon, he went to the burning gods and there performed a ritual involving some bones and some ashes and certain mantras that also were used for these purposes. And as he sat there on the bank of the river offering the oblations in a fire, then he invoked the presence of the goddess. And the goddess first, terrible gush of wind came across the plains and clouds started to build up in the sky. And then a female voice said loudly, "O Raghunath Chudamani, Raghunath, know for certain that soon Your competitor, Vrajanat, will be no more. It was a sweet moment for Raghunath. Something he'd desired for a long time. And he left that riverbank in ecstasy. So, meanwhile, Vrajanath had come upon some text recently that he had not read yet. But these texts were ascribed to Nimai Pandit. Actually, Nimai Pandit had been such a scholar, right? And of Nyaya. And that it was incredible. But somehow or other, there was not much in writing. Not much. But something he found, some articles, some papers, not directly written by Nimai, but others had bent down the teachings of Nimai Pandit, and it was really, really sharp and really interesting, and like it was something. Vrajana was like, you know, totally like over the moon, you know. I was like, whoa, this is good stuff. And he was reading it, and then, you know, but then he sort of read also. He also read that Nimai Pandit had just given up Nyaya, and that he had taken up Vaishnavism now. Wasn't that awkward? Wasn't that strange? Wasn't that interesting at the same time? And wasn't that intriguing? So Vrajanath certainly became curious. What else happened to Nimai Pandit? And he became sort of obsessed with Nimai Pandit and to find out everything he could about Nimai. And as a result, he just got in a lot of Vaishnava philosophy, and that made him curious. And therefore, one day, Vrajanath, who lived in Navadvip, decided to take the boat across the river and go to Mayapur to meet the Babas who were living there. Now, these Babas, they were not considered very high caste, because you see, the thing about these Babas was that they would take off their Brahmin thread, right, as a symbol of being transcendental to Varnashram, as is customary in the line of the six Goswamis. So that was a bit, you know, but that at the same time opened up the door to the mixing of all kinds of castes. Therefore, these Babas had a reputation that you couldn't really be sure what someone's caste was. And for a Brahmana, for actually someone who had taken an exalted Brahmin birth, you know what I'm saying, after many, many lifetimes, a birth in a proper Gotra, actually within a Brahmin family, it was really like kind of totally, absolutely unacceptable to go to such and mix with such low-class men. But Vrajana just put it aside. His curiosity got the better of him. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Don't they say that curiosity kills the cat? Oh dear. Anyway, so Vrajanath went there to these Babas and found them very pleasant and very learned, and found the meeting very, very inspiring. And he found that the philosophy of Krishna consciousness made a lot of sense. And therefore Vrajanath went home, and he was kind of in a really good mood, and he hadn't been in such a good mood for a long time. So everyone noticed it, like his family noticed it. I said, oh, Vrajana, you're so happy. I went to Mayapur today, and it was really inspiring. I met with these Vaishnavas there, and it really was amazing. There was very deep understanding of scripture. It was really something.
So I was like, the whole family is like, you know, I mean, those Vaishnavas, those low-class people, are classic, you know, I mean, this is getting like serious. It's like, his Vrajanath's mother was late, but his aunt, you know, was sort of the lady looking after the family, and she's getting very concerned, you know what I mean? It's like, I think that the real problem is that our Vrajanath is not married. Yeah. I mean, he's got too much time. He's got too much time on his hands, and he gets his head into all these things, you know. And if he would just, like, you know, get down to earth and deal with, like, the practical facts of life, then, you know, he would get over all these things. I think it's time we make arrangements for his marriage as soon as possible. So while all this was going on, Vrajanath continued going to his Babaji's, although they tried to discourage him, but he wouldn't listen, and, you know, he wasn't going to take any instructions, so they carefully, tactfully tried to discourage him, and it just didn't work. So the whole family was talking about, what are we going to do? It's getting out of hand. Then one nephew named Beni Madhav. Beni Madhav said, no problem, auntie, I can fix this. No problem, auntie. I know exactly how to deal with this. Leave it in my good hands. Oh, Beni Madhav, you are an angel. You have been sent to answer our prayers. And Beni Madhav went. When Vrajanath left the house, and everybody knew he was going to buy. Then Beni Madhav also followed. But he took a boat one after Vrajanath. So he reached Mayapur shortly after Vrajanath. So when he came there, Beni Madhav was waiting, sort of in a hidden place, a bit covered place. And he waited to see when Vrajanath would return from the area where the Babas lived. There's a little village. So he's waiting, not so far from the village. And sure enough, he saw how Vrajanath left the village. And then Beni Madhav, shortly after, entered into the village. And he went straight to the Babaji's. And he said, you know, oh, do you know this person named Vrajanath? And his wife says, yes. Yes, he said, I happened to be here in Mayapur today for some business, and I happened to see that he was coming from your village. And well, you know, Beni Madhav said, actually, you know, Vrajanath, as of late, has been visiting your village quite regularly, isn't it? Said, you know, you may wonder how I know. Well, I'll tell you how I know. Vrajanath is making fun of your entire Vaishnav community. You are the talk of town in Navadvip. He is just smearing your reputation with slander and pointing out how these low-class people are misunderstanding the scriptures, and he's twisting everything you say. Watch out for Vrajanath. He is a terrible politician. In this way, Beni Madhav went there to stir it up. And then later, then he went back to Navadvipa, and then when Vrajanath came home, then he said, oh, today, you know, Vrajanath, I wanted to speak to you. Today I had to go to Mayapur for some business, and then I happened to bump into these Babas that live there. And they started talking about you. That was amazing. But the things they said about you, that shocked me. That really shocked me. They were saying, we shall make this Brahmana fall from his caste. Yes, they said. No, really. You know, you may not believe, but you know, they really said it. I was shocked. I was really shocked when I heard it. So Beni Madhav is meanwhile stirring it up and creating more and more confusion. But to no avail, you know, like Vrajanath is disgusted with him and sees right through it, and the Vaishnavas also see right through it, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. And in fact, it gets to the point that Vrajanath goes there to take initiation from the Vaishnavas. And it's at that point that he just abandons all this Nyaya and the goddess, the prophecy of the goddess is now coming to pass. Now, Vrajanath, the scholar, is no more. So in this way, Jiva Dharma is unfolding and is carrying on, and there is much more. There is much more. You know, many things happen there in this with these apologies. And at one point, there are some people. They are some older couple, and they come and they settle into the area. And actually, the story is this: these older people. They are from Saptagram, which is at some distance from Navadvipa, but also a very well-known, famous place, Nartanga Thakur's area, King Krishna Chandra. So it is said they were actually the old people. They had some business in their days, a shop and so on, and they had some savings. But somehow or other, due to the fact that they had never been short of money, and they had given everything to their children they could, but because the children grew up without any hardships, they became spoiled. And therefore these children, in their old age, did not take care of their aging parents. So the parents felt very sad and like deeply, hurt by the whole thing. So they made a plan. And they called all their children, my dear sons and daughters. Right? You know, we feel a little unhappy, right? We feel like not really cared for in our old age by any of you. But, all right, so be it. But we have made a plan and an offer for all of you. Whoever of you will take responsibility for taking care of their aging parents will get a great benefit. We have some savings from the day of the shop, and these savings we have kept in a hidden place. But the one of you, or those of you, who will serve their parents very nicely, they will get those savings. Well, you know, the kids, they had a meeting after that. It's outrageous, you know. What does the old man think, you know what I mean? To speak in such a way, I mean, I tell you, he's totally lost it, you know, and I mean, he's just too much, you know what? You know what, said the eldest son, I have an idea. You know, we send them on a pilgrimage to Navadvip, and then we just like, you know, dig up the whole house until we find the treasure.
as simple as that. Finished, you know. No taking care of the old folks, and just take the trailer. Everyone very intelligent. He always was the one with the brain. Yeah. Anyway, and then, you know. So they went to their parents and they said, you know, we were deeply touched and actually realized that we have neglected you and that we haven't really cared for you with the love that children should show to their parents, and therefore we thought about it, and we thought that actually in your old age the thing that is the most important is that you spend some time for spiritual life. Therefore we've all put some money together that, and there's this old lady, a Vaishnavi, and she will take you to Navadvip. She's very familiar with Navadvip, so that you can go on a pilgrimage and visit the holy places there. And just, we really feel we want to do this for our parents. It's like all the parents, oh, love our children, finally, you know, some love. Oh, ah, yes, oh, tear. So anyway, the parents, they went to Navadvip, and as they arrived there, the news came that their children had ruthlessly dug up the whole house and this and that and found the treasure. And they got so upset, these elderly people, they were thinking about going back. But then, the elderly Vaishnavi that accompanied said, it may not be wise for you to go. They may kill you if you go there. She said, oh my God, what to do now? So they stayed in Navadvip. And they also started to regularly go to Mayapur and hear from the Vaishnavas who were discussing. And every day philosophical discussions were taking place. And one day, suddenly, this group of Muslims came in. About 50 of them. And, you know, on horses and everything. So, I mean, like with soldiers and the whole thing, it looked serious. You know what I'm saying? It's like at the time, Bengals and the Muslim rule. And, you know, when they would come, they could just destroy everything. You know, it looked like, oh my God, it gets serious. But the Babaji's were peaceful. And they said, we have come for a discussion with you. The Hindus are worshipping the deity form. The deity form. And this is idolatry, right? So, you know, what about this? On what strength are you worshipping this form? So a huge discussion came about, and, you know, obviously what was at stake was serious. So in that chapter, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives an extensive explanation as he is speaking to the Babaji's about as he's speaking to the Muslims, he is explaining to them how also in Islam, also in the Quran, they recognize that there can be a spiritual manifestation of the Lord. So in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes a case for deity worship on the basis of the Quran. And he quotes a particular word, a term that I forgot right now. Something like Ru. which is the particular word in the Quran used for that. I'd have to to look at the chapter to get it back in my memory, which I didn't do. Anyway, but the chapter is dealing with the biggest challenge that we have with Islam. Yeah. So in this way, in the book, he systematically enters into dialogue with various philosophies and with various outlooks. Then he gives us insights into the culture that was existing at the time in Bengal. And then he goes to deeper and deeper aspects of the philosophy. And in this way, this book, Jivadharma, contains really a very extensive and deep overview of Vaishnava philosophy. And it's an easy read. It is something that somewhere along the line one should read. Of course, when? Yeah, one should finish the Bhagavatam, you know, as soon as possible. Some people should start reading the Bhagavatam. And then finish it quickly. Because there's so much more to read that will give us more understanding about the Bhagavatam. This Jivadharma is a book that will give us deep insights. Through Jivadharma we understand Bhagavatam. So all these things you have to read. Read Srila Prabhupada's books, and also read the books of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And as you begin, you can start with Harinam Chintamani. And then as you carry on, you can read Jivadharma. And then when you're done with that, you can read Chaitanya Saksamrita. And then it's only other books. Bhakti Tattva Viveka. Suddenly Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur enters into describing the Western philosophers. And he gives a complete analysis of Western philosophy and critiques them and establishes Vedic philosophy as superior. And you go like, my God, he knew his stuff. Yes, you know. Of course, he mentions a few of like British philosophers that are not so prominent to us, but that were maybe prominent in his day and age in India. But boy, was he well read. Just really conversant and systematically. Bang, from the Greeks up to his modern age. Then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur started to do some creative preaching. And he writes this book called the Krishna Samhita. It's super interesting. Because the Krishna Samhita basically gives us a summary of the Bhagavad Gita. Wow. No, but it also gives us 60 pages of introduction. And in this introduction, he really does something quite interesting. He, first of all, as a preaching strategy, says, we can look at the scripture and we can separate the historical elements in the scripture from the philosophical elements. And we're looking particularly at the philosophical elements. In this way, you know, he is dealing with the skeptical Englishman who will say, yes, but your Bhagavad is full of, you know, historical flaws, right? So, I mean, how can we take this serious, you know? Therefore, he separates the two. But then in the introduction, he goes into the whole historical thing. And he just takes the Manus and all these descriptions as worldly kings. Yes. And he traces back the whole lineage from the Manus. and so on, and it calculates an average age as the for these monks. Then takes quotes from the Bhagavad that, and by his calculation, he manages to date the Bhagavad still before Christianity, even by following a Western empirical method. Yeah. I mean, it's not that he was thinking about the Bhagavatam like this, but it was a strategy. It's called Adunikavad. Adunika means modernism. Yeah. So he was presenting the Bhagavatam now according to the views of the modern world of his time. And he was using it in a way to still establish that Vedic culture came before the Western culture. It's super interesting. But when you read it, of course, you must not miss that statement, which some people did miss, the statement that he says that this is for the sake of argument. You know, for the sake of argument, that means, is a statement which means we don't buy the argument, but for the sake of argument, let's say it is like this. And then if we argue along those lines, then even still. Yeah. So for the sake of argument. So Krishna Samhita also is very interesting. In this way we see that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was truly an intellectual giant, truly a spiritual giant, truly a person who was so broad, so very broad, and really dealt with every aspect of Vaishnavism. Therefore, if you haven't really read Prabhupada's books, and after that haven't really read the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then you are still in your mother's womb. Any questions? After that. Yes.
You were explaining how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so expert in any field he touched, actually. In that poem you mentioned, you know, about the Haridas Thakur, Sarvagrahi Vaishnava, actually it's so brilliant, because not only does it present the whole gamut of Vaishnava philosophy, yeah, 22 stanzas, but it does something which most of the English poets couldn't do, and that is that it strictly follows rhyme and meter.
Mm-hmm.
Even most of the English poets couldn't do that.
Right.
Such a brilliant poem.
I should read it this afternoon.
Something from
this. Yeah, we'll read it this afternoon. It is just too much. You know? It's like, as in on a day like this, you just wonder, what do you do? I mean, it just.
Actually, that can be sung.
If you can sing it.
Alas for those who spend their days invested.
Yeah. There you go. You're going to sing it this afternoon. I just don't know that there is I guess it's a traditional British melody, is it?
I don't know. That's the one the spiritual master sings.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't know the melody. I wouldn't dare to sing it.
Beautiful, because everything.
There we go.
Right down in.
We're going to do it together, Shaman, and we're going to rehearse it. I'll play harmonium. And you sing.
I'm sure you can sing it.
No, I'm not so good at such songs, honestly, but I'll play harmonium at least. We'll rehearse it. Special performance. We'll be nice. Then we'll speak on it together. It would be nice if this afternoon we could have a few speakers, like Leila, Vipabu, yourself, say something about the Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Question, comments, otherwise on the Jiva, okay.
Maharaj, in general,
Dharma,
we see that Vaisnava Thakur is using the concept of fiction to convey a message. That isn't done so much in our sampradaya, not really done now so much. Is it not done so much?
Or no?
I mean, from what I've
It's not done so much now. Sri Ram Maharaj has been doing it, you know, in his writing, and Satsarup Maharaj did it in our movement. Yes, Sachinanda Maharaj did it, Tamal Krishna Maharaj did it. They all wrote novels. So some of our leaders have ventured out on the novel genre. But one has to be careful, you know, like not to compromise the facts that are given in the scripture. Satsarup Maharaj has this novel about a boy that has been born in the family of the demons at the time of Prahlad, and he's a classmate of Prahlad. So he's describing Prahlad as his schoolmate, and what an amazing... And he describes the story from the perspective of a classmate. Yeah. But he remains true, Satsarup Maharaj is careful to remain true to the historical points that are given in the Bhagavatam. He's not deviating from that. But he just gives that perspective. So it must be done carefully, then it can be a very nice contribution. Yeah. You're inspired.
I was also wondering of if it said who is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Diksha.
Diksha Guru. Yeah, but that's a whole can of worms to open that up. Bipin Bihari Goswami was his Diksha Guru in at the time. However, we must understand that Vaishnavism at that time, the pure unalloyed teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone a bit underground at the time, and that he had taken Diksha in the line from Bipin Bihari Goswami. But in the end, it came to a major difference on the situation of the birth site. Bipin Bihari Goswami did not agree with the birth site being in Mayapur, and rather voted for Navadvip. So that created like a very difficult situation. It created a distance and a shifting towards Jagannath Das Babaji, who as a Siksha Guru who then became more prominent. Now, it's a complex thing, because how can you do such a thing? But we have to see it in the context. A, who is Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Right? I mean, what level of quality does he have as a disciple? B, you know, the lineage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so important and so essential, right? That therefore, since Jagannath Das Babaji was clearly the prominent and direct representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, that relationship became more important than the Diksha relationship. Although he remained respectful but somewhat distant and, you know, on this matter of the birth site. Meanwhile, Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not just discover the birth site, but then next he comes up with this book called Navadvipa Mahatmya, and it describes how Nityananda goes to Mayapur and shows Jiva Goswami around. But Jiva Goswami doesn't speak about it. Jiva Goswami didn't write about it. Now, of course, one might say that that's logical because, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took me on Parikrama. I mean, it would be something to write about, wouldn't it? You know? So, I mean, it would be understandable that he didn't write about it, but we didn't hear about it from anybody else either until so much later Bhaktivinoda Thakur comes up with this well, you know, what about this? It's one of those things.
Nah.
It's just one of those things, guys. So don't go out to the world and say, here's the evidence, you know, like, Navadvipdhammahatmya, you know what I mean? It's sort of a in-house book, in a way. But in-house, it has been given full importance, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta took it completely serious, and here we have, he started to follow all the holy places according to the book, and create the parikrama, and make it famous. So Navadvipdhamma Mahatmya is very important to us, and because it reveals the Dhamma. Yet its authority, its basis of authority, based on Vedic scripture, is not easily established. But we accept it as completely qualified on the strength of our charge. Okay, I'll stop now. It's 9:30. You have to go a little longer on a day like today. That's tradition. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's transcendental appearance day ki jai.